how is it that the recipient of the evil is somebody else and not the doer?
Well, it's both actually. You are not seeing both. But actually recipient of evil are both. You might say that whatever evil is manifested is a part of the totality. And we all share in it. Even those who are not connected with that action, even they share in it. If somebody burns a train, running train, all the who are in the train are suffering. And if that person happens to be inside, he also suffers. Now you might say that if he is outside the train, he doesn't suffer, he only makes others suffer. But that is a partial perception, in the sense that it is true that from that suffering he is free. But there is a karma which he has done, which remains in him. And you have to see more deeply whether it does not hurt his sense of perfection to remain as a very great saint said, to remain imperfect is itself a punishment, is itself an evil. The man who burned the train, the very fact that he decided to burn it is itself a punishment. He lives in a state of consciousness from which he cannot come out. Once he has done this action, for him, he will not be able to attain to nirvana until that action is washed out. To expect that that man will enjoy the nirvana, that is not possible, because the karma which he has built, which he has done, will bind him. It will necessarily take him to another series of actions.
Guru, this means that the people who suffered on his account, they washed off a certain amount of karma and they are closer to nirvana?
Pardon? It's a very interesting question, but repeat it.
I said that he was not on the train. He did not suffer in that particular incident, but the people on the train suffered. So does that wash off some of the bad karmas and put them in a better off or closer to nirvana?
You mean those who are burning?
Yeah,
those who are burning. The more you suffer, you are closer to God.
Does that annul something for them?
You cannot equate so easily. You might even say that they are suffering because of certain actions which they have done in the past.
Yeah, which have been washed off on account of what they
now, whether suffering washes off is also a question. Whether my suffering, as she said just now, suffering brings you closer to God. Is it really true in every case? It may not be. It may not be. It may not be necessarily
true. But it is partially true.
No, partially everything is, even to say that everything is good is also partially true.
Subjective.
That is partially true. We are going to the sting of the problem. The sting of the problem is that there is something, evil is that, which ought not to be, which could have been avoided, which is still not avoided. That is the real definition of evil. Which could have been avoided, which is not avoided. When you say you ought to do, what exactly do you mean? When your child does not do the lesson and you say you ought to have read, what is exactly the meaning of it? Meaning is the child was capable of reading. It only depended upon his or her will to read, which he or she had but did not exercise it. It was possible for the child to read. It was not as if it was impossible. If you knew that the child is sick and she could not have read, then you can't say ought to have read. You use the word ought only when something was possible, something was desirable, and yet it is not being done. And that is the sting of evil. And such a thing happens, it exists in the world. It is that problem we have to solve. Does such evil exist in the world? The answer is yes. It's a fact that there is something in the world which ought not to be, or at least could not have been, and yet it exists. Is it possible to reconcile Satchidananda with the presence of evil of this kind? That which ought not to have been, which still exists, which could have been avoided, and yet it is not avoided. This is the real problem. In fact, suffering is also basically of this kind. You call something suffering, all suffering implies, oh, I don't want it. Anybody who suffers really feels it ought not to be there. Now, when you say it ought not to be there, means that you believe that it could have been avoided. Otherwise, how can you say it ought not to be there? In any experience of suffering or evil, this is the fundamental point. In fact, if you remove this sense, if supposing this sense is removed from the world altogether, then you might even say that all sense of progress or desire to progress vanishes. You cannot progress if you say there is nothing here to be avoided. Everything will happen exactly at the time it is to happen, and everything that will happen will be good, because seen from the totality's point of view, it is always good. Then nothing remains for you to do. Everything will happen as it happens, but that is not the truth of our existence.
That's very peaceful
existence. Peaceful and inert, and after all, you cannot even sustain it. Even if you believe in it, the moment somebody insults you, you will not say it is very good. From the point of totality, it is good. You will react to it.
Something inside.
And when you react, what happens? When you react, what do you say actually imply? It ought not to have happened. It could have been avoided. Then only you react. If you knew it could not have been avoided, then you cannot say it is wrong. So there is something in humanity which gives rise to this sense of evil, which can be defined as that which ought not to be, which still exists even though it is avoidable. This is the basic sense of evil. And that is the crux of the problem. How can you reconcile God with the world's situation in which such an evil exists? Could God not have created the world? Could you say to God that, look, this was avoidable, it is not desirable, and yet you have done it, therefore God is evil? This is the charge against God. And it is this which is the problem which has to be resolved. Now, how shall we resolve it? Therefore, we have to see, we have not to escape from the problem. It is easy to escape from the problem. One escape I have already shown by saying that God is not responsible for man's actions. Second, to say that everything happens according to karma, God is not there. Third is to say God does not exist at all. Everything is karma. The fourth is to say that everything happens in the world is good, there is no evil at all. Is also an escape route. Now, we have rejected all the escape routes. We want to keep God in the front because our premise is God exists, Satchidananda exists, He is Ananda, He is consciousness, He is bliss. Without compromising on this premise and without overcoating by any kind of sweetness over the evil, seeing that evil does exist in the world, we have got to face the problem squarely and answer this problem. So this is where we now come to the next chapter, number 12, the solution. Now the answer is actually in the context of evolution. This is the one word which is central in the solution of the problem. This world is not a static world. It is not as if the whole world is already there as it is and the totality of it is already present. This world, I am not speaking of Satchidananda. Satchidananda is the totality past, present, future, everything. Therefore, we must realize that we are dealing with a problem which is concerning a world where totality is not yet. We are not dealing with that aspect where totality already exists. We are dealing with a world where totality is not yet. So this world is not a static world. That is the first answer to this question. Unless you grant this proposition, you will not be able to solve the problem of evil.